Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering. 105. That is how many days Michelle Wu has been mayor of Boston. She marked the 100th day mark last week, and mandates to protest to a slew of new initiatives. It has been anything but quiet. Well, today Mayor Wu is here to reflect on those first 100 days and take your questions in our regular segment, Mondays with the Mayor. So what questions do you have? You can join us, 800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. You can tweet us at Radio Boston, which many of you have been doing all day, or you can send an email. We're at radioboston@gmail.com. Mayor Wu joins us now on the line. Mayor Wu, welcome back. How are you?
I'm great. It's great to be with you, Tiziana.
I'm glad to have you. I gotta tell you, Mayor Wu, there's a lot to talk about, a big policy move you made earlier this afternoon. It is a contentious time in the city, but I really want to root us first in a different place, which is a bigger picture, a call to others, being aware of what the rest of the world is paying attention to right now, which is the Russian invasion of Ukraine. So maybe we can start there, and I can ask you what you are hearing from Ukrainians who live in our city.
You know, it's just such an unimaginable moment in how we think about the bonds of our society and of how we relate to community members and see countries around the world grappling with what it means for the basics of safety, of sovereignty, of peace. And I've had the chance to be in community at the march and the rally for solidarity over the weekend with my family, and had the chance to be at prayer service with some of our congregations with our Ukrainian community right here in Boston. And it's a sense of shock that we're at this point now, at this moment in our history.
Is there a person you've spoken to over the last few days, whether at a religious service or on the common this weekend, who's present of mind for you today?
At the Christ the King Ukrainian Catholic Church service in the middle of several days ago, we were present through the service, and clearly it was an emotional gathering. And afterwards, a community member came up to me. He was there with his daughter and described how he had grown up in Ukraine and come to this country, and just to be here in this moment, realizing how many people are having to put aside everything in their lives in this moment to pick up arms and defend your basic humanity and survival is just a staggering, devastating feeling.
What can you do? What can the city do? What can the mayor do to support both Ukrainians and Russians in the city who are hurting right now?
Well, we are already in conversation with some of our partners at other levels of government. We know there are Ukrainians in Boston today who are on visas, who need to have that protection extended, whether it's similar to a temporary protected status, a TPS type protection, or other measures. So our Mayor's Office of Immigrant Advancement is working to make sure that we can advocate as much as possible there. We know that there are local communities who have sister city relationships with certain communities in Ukraine as well. And we're working to support those efforts to ensure that people can connect and send resources. And in this moment, it is a strong public solidarity that we hope will make a difference as well, to push back and say that we see our shared humanity. And for Ukrainians in Boston, for Russians in Boston, and for all those who have family in this conflict, that we are praying for peace. We are advocating for every possible resolution to the situation.
So at Evan Francis 521 tweets to you, what can Bostonians do to help Ukrainians in the city and Ukrainians abroad? What is your call to action for people?
Well, there are several funds that have been started up from local community members to direct support to Ukraine, and particularly through that sister city, informal sister city relationship. There are organizations that have been advocating for peace and stability, and we'll look to make some of those resources publicly available so people know how to get involved as well.
I appreciate us touching bases on that, Mayor Wu. There are a lot of policy issues for us to go after now, too, including some pretty immediate stuff. So I'm going to begin with protests and an ordinance you proposed earlier this afternoon. And I'm just going to jump in and say you filed this ordinance regarding what you're calling targeted residential picketing. And I just want to define as, quote, picketing, protesting, or demonstrating with or without signs or sound amplification that is specifically directed toward a particular residence or one or more occupants of the residence, and which takes place before or about the targeted residence, end quote. Of course, what's going to echo is the people who've been in front of your own home, Mayor Wu, over the last weeks. I noticed that this puts limitations between 9 p.m. and 9 a.m. What else does it do, and why are you doing it?
We're a city that has a strong legacy of ensuring that people have a voice. And I have been at more than my share of public protests and marches. And we so value that kind of ability to and want to protect the right to speak your mind, to be part of a healthy, robust democracy, to give that accountability and pushback. At the same time, we are in a moment in our national politics that is quite divided. And we see that spilling over into rhetoric that feeds rising hate. We see that spilling over into targeted harassment of communities. And in what I and my neighbors have experienced for 9 weeks now of targeted harassment right in front of your home as well.
So you feel you've been being harassed?
You know, what the ordinance proposes is in line with what we have seen in other parts of the country. So there's a Supreme Court case from a number of years ago that upheld the ability for a local town in Wisconsin to put some parameters around residential picketing. And the cause of this was a situation in town where anti-abortion activists were repeatedly going to the homes of doctors who have been performing abortions and specifically harassing them from the sanctity and peace of their homes. Our ordinance is much more targeted and limited. It really just puts restrictions from 9 p.m. to 9 a.m. to protect those early morning hours and late night hours that are really valuable for sleep and your health and well-being and that sense of having the peacefulness of your home. And it's something that my neighbors have lost for nearly 9 weeks now with almost daily 7 a.m. Protests on our street and the disturbance that causes for seniors, right? My World War II veteran neighbor next door, our families with young kids all down the street. And this is a situation where, you know, for me, it's something I signed up for. I ran for office. I welcome that accountability, but it does have an impact on the health and well-being of our communities. And this will help ensure that we can protect our First Amendment rights while also protecting quality of life and health and well-being.
So, you know, I've been watching this unfold for a while, and I've asked you in the past here on the show, you know, how you've been experiencing those protests. Are you okay? Are your kids okay? Is your mom okay? You've demurred in answering some of those questions. You've used the word harassment here. You've invoked Wisconsin. You've also invoked the First Amendment, and it does seem like there is a fine line between shutting down protest that's inconvenient or uncomfortable and shutting down harassment. And it sounds like you feel you've reached that line. You've reached that marker. Is that right? And what are the risks, Mayor Wu, of doing this?
Yeah, I would say that's right. And that's why there are very finely tailored time limits on this, because at a certain point, when you have the ability to advocate at City Hall or protest in front of public buildings, you have the ability to write letters to the editor or organize a campaign to support a candidate that might be more in line with your views. There, we want to ensure there are many avenues as possible for people to help support our democratic process and be involved and speak your views. But when the goal becomes less about speaking, you know, having the right to be heard and share your views, and more about repeatedly taking away a community's sleep every single day at 7 a.m. just to ensure that you can try to verge on breaking the will of that community, you know, that is harassment. And Boston is better than that. We are in a moment where so much has become normalized in our national politics, whether it's rhetoric that goes even beyond hate or this kind of targeted harassment. And we want to ensure that in our city, we are delivering not just bold, urgent policies, but inclusive, empowering politics. And this will be a step in that direction.
So this is such a big deal. I'm going to stay with it with you for a couple of more minutes here. I have a couple more questions I want to ask you. And the first is, I'm actually trying to imagine enforcement. Now, so let's say it goes into effect. So what are we seeing? Are we seeing police arresting people out front of your house at 7:30 a.m. because it's not 9 a.m.? Who will enforce this and how? And given how divided we are, how contentious this is, does that worry you? Escalation?
This is something that is not changing our criminal laws or statutes. It is adding fines to this situation. And so while it would be enforced through law enforcement, it's at, I think it's something like a $100 fine for the first incident and ramping up from there. It is a fine line. And these are very, very difficult and thorny balances to get right. We want to make sure that we are a city where everybody has the right and has every possible option to be involved in our democracy. We also want to show what being involved in our democracy means in terms of supporting our communities and not harming the fabric and disrupting and tearing apart our communities.
Do you have the support of the Boston City Council on this?
It is being presented at the, it was just filed today for this week's City Council meeting, which will take place on Wednesday. You know, some members of the council have also experienced this at their own homes. And so I look forward to and welcome their feedback and stewardship of this, the legislative process. And we'll see where it goes from there. But the goal is that we want to set a tone where we're supporting activism, encouraging participation in our democracy. But that also means setting reasonable parameters so that everyone can be part of our democracy. And we are curbing some of the more, some of the practices verging more on harassment that are really infringing on people's ability to live in the peace and sanctity of their homes.
Are you expecting you might come home to an applause line out front of your house from your neighbors tonight on this?
That and maybe more protests the next morning, even more furiously, who knows? But at this point, my neighbors have gone through quite a lot, right? It has been 9 weeks of experiencing this first thing in the morning at 7 a.m. nearly every single day. And there has been so much support and just love and community on my street. It is what I treasure, one of the things I treasure most about living in this city. And I want to make sure that my neighbors and neighbors all across our city have the ability to be in a vibrant city, be in a vibrant democracy, and also enjoy their homes.
Why don't we pick up a call here? 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We've got Emma on the line in Boston. Emma, you are on with Boston Mayor Michelle Wu.
Hi, Mayor Wu. Just a quick question. You know, you had nothing to say when protesters were outside of Baker's home, Governor Baker.
So, Emma, I'm going to stop you there, and I'm going to play a really clear line for everybody right now. We expected this. We knew that there was organizing in social media today to bring people on to talk with the mayor further about resistance to her COVID policies, et cetera. We are a place of dialogue and community here, and if you lie to get on the air, I'm not putting you on the air. There are reasonable and legitimate questions to ask on this, and we want that dialogue, but that's how we're going to do that here because that's what the Radio Boston community is. So, Mayor Wu, I apologize that that one came through. And in order to signal that we're serious about that dialogue as well, I'm actually going to ask you a question from the Boston First Responders United, who organized online today to try to get people to swamp calls. And I'm going to ask you a question they tweeted. How much money is it costing taxpayers for you to fight the vaccine mandate injunction put forth by public safety unions? At this point, isn't this money best spent on housing the houseless, feeding the hungry, substance abuse recovery programs, early education programs, et cetera?
I am very much in agreement that there are many, many important initiatives across our city that I wish all of our time and energy and resources could be going to instead of continuing to want to protect the ability for the city to keep our workforce and our community members safe. We are appealing the most recent court decision because there's strong precedent over decades and across all different jurisdictions that municipal governments and state and state entities are able to issue those protections, especially in times of a public health emergency. And so we are going to keep moving forward with that while we are addressing all of the other issues as well. But I agree that it is unfortunate we are still here in some ways still talking about a relatively small number of people who want to assert an absolute right to be unvaccinated and interact with the public and serve in these roles.
So I will ask you, is there a price tag to this legal fight? And is it something you will share with the public?
I don't know what the number is to share. And in this moment, there is a price tag for every action that we take. It is staff time that is used on different initiatives at the expense of what else could be accomplished in a 24-hour period. And every bit of time that we are engaging in legal decisions does take energy and resources. But this is an important marker for the city of Boston to ensure that we can have the authority to take actions that other city governments, other state governments, and other public-serving employers have done in times of public health emergency and for the greater good. Unfortunately, we're seeing the numbers go in the right direction so that this surge, this most recent surge, is almost over. We are not out of this pandemic yet, and COVID-19 will very likely continue being something that we have to discuss and spend energy and resources on into next fall and winter and beyond. But we are going to take every action to be prepared to have the plans in place. And that includes having the legal authorities to take the actions that are necessary.
So there are 8 different ways we could go there. I think because you just said, you know, COVID-19, we're close to the end of this surge, but we're not quite done yet. Let's take another current immediate policy issue, which is tomorrow, the meetings around masks. The city's Board of Health, Public Health Commission meeting tomorrow to decide the future of the mask mandate for businesses. Schools will come into this mix as well. I want to start with the businesses. CDC changed their recommendations last week, saying people in all counties of Massachusetts can go mask-free indoors. Do you anticipate a move tomorrow on that for the city? And do you support a change in policy for the city now?
The numbers are looking really good, and the CDC's guidance has been helpful in affirming the direction of where the Boston Public Health Commission had already been moving and helping to steer in our city, which is to have clear metrics around how we understand what phase of action we need to be taking. Are we seeing a surge start? Are we in the height of a high transmission period? Are we coming out of a surge? Are we fully out of a surge? And having those numbers defined in the CDC's case based on a slightly different set of numbers, but largely aligned with the city and the Public Health Commission around hospital capacity, around the strain on our healthcare system, and around the transmission positivity within our community.
So you used those metrics when you made the decision. You were very clear about what the metrics would be to step back from requiring proof of vaccination in many businesses, for example. And when we hit those thresholds, you stepped back. Do you have targets in mind? You know, sort of like a, depending on how you want to look at it, Mayor Wu, either a floor or a ceiling, where when we hit those triggers, masks come off. And if we hit those triggers in the other direction, masks go back on. Do you have those metrics explicitly in mind, and can you share them?
Well, tomorrow, the Boston Public Health Commission, the Board of Health, and Dr. Basola Ojukwutu will discuss specifics and the timeline and parameters. We were looking at, with masks in particular, tying this as well into also considering the fact that families, many families with school-aged children were out and about and potentially even traveling during this most recent school vacation week. And so giving it a little bit of time past that one quarantine period or so in order to make sure that the impacts of that travel and exposure in other places wouldn't see a significant bump in our numbers here. But we're basically there, and look forward to the presentation tomorrow before the board.
Back in the last televised debate before you were elected, at that time, Governor Baker had the 80% threshold in place for schools. So if a school reached the point where basically everybody in the building, 80% of everybody in the building was vaccinated, then the school could seek a waiver to remove masks. And I remember asking you at that debate, would you do that in Boston? And you basically said no. So I'm wondering, is the default position that masks need to be on kids until there's a reason to take them off? Or is the default position that masks shouldn't be on kids until there's a reason to put them on? Do you understand my question?
Yeah, I understand your question. And I think the reason why in the forum that you were referencing, I said no, and it still holds today, is that there are deep disparities across our school district. And so even looking at the most recent vaccination numbers, there are very few schools that are even above 70% vaccination across our student population. It's really just a small number of them across the entire district. The gaps are quite large for pediatric vaccinations. And so we want to be thoughtful, because it is unlikely that the majority of our schools will get to 80% vaccination rates across the student population. But if transmission rates are so low that we have the chance to give our students some sense of being able to have an experience without masks, and there's not the safety risk because the rates are so low, that's the kind of more complex interaction within our school system that we need to be discussing and fleshing out. Our schools are a set of different considerations than the general mask mandate, because our buildings are tighter spaces. Many of them are older buildings and lack updated ventilation systems to the type of airflow that would be ideal, especially in this current health situation. And so we need to be mindful of the facilities, the physical environment, as well as the gaps in vaccinations that still remain for our student population.
All right, I'm going to transition us out of that. As I do, I'll give a shout to listener Michael Gaskin, who had also had the CDC question on his mind on Facebook. Hope we got that answered for you, Michael. Mayor Wu, I'm going to go to a break in a moment. Before I do, we mentioned at the beginning that this was your first 100 days, and I just want to give you a minute to be proud, and I want to ask you what you're most proud of from your first 100 days in office before we go to a break.
There's so much that our team has gotten done, even more than I imagined, and for everything from making a big step forward in massing CAS, investing in affordable housing, and launching 3 free bus lines that start tomorrow, actually. What I'm proudest of is really showing that more is possible through city government and in this city in particular. We have a lot to do, but Boston has every resource in the world, and we most of all need the belief that we can take these issues on and can move forward with more than one thing at a time.
All right. You are listening to Radio Boston. It's Mondays with the Mayor. We have Boston Mayor Michelle Wu here with us. What questions do you have for the mayor? Best way is tweet us at Radio Boston, or you can call us 800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Mayor Wu, I'm going to jump right in with a question from a listener on Twitter. This is from at OneCade. Would love an update on the workings of the Boston Police Department Commissioner Search Committee and when the public can expect to hear anything about candidates, et cetera. And just to remind our listeners, we are without permanent Boston Police Commissioner after Dennis White was fired by interim Boston Mayor Kim Janey, and you have put a search in place. So maybe you can give us an update there.
Yes, that's right. Our search committee was named last month, and it is 5 amazing individuals and community leaders who have been hard at work. They have helped us lead several public listening sessions to get feedback from the public generally through Zoom town halls, and are still in the process of speaking with specific stakeholder groups, for example, organizations of police officers or young people or other community leaders. We have also put out an RFP or request for proposals for a search firm to partner with and support the work of the search committee. So one of the next steps will be locking down that choice of a search firm partner, and then reporting out what the results of these listening sessions have been, essentially sharing publicly what we have heard and what the search committee will be keeping in mind in terms of the qualifications and background and vision perspective of who the next what the next commissioner should bring to the table. And then after that, launching into the process of assessing interest, openly asking for applicants to be vetted, interviewed, and then presented.
Do you anticipate having a new commissioner this year?
Yes, absolutely. The hope is still by spring, fingers crossed. And this is a huge opportunity for the city. There is tremendous excitement and support for the types of changes and trust building that is very much needed in this moment in Boston. And I imagine that this will be an exciting opportunity for whomever is ready to step into that role. So I can't wait to lock this down.
In these listening sessions, have you learned anything you didn't know before? Or has somebody given you something to think about that you hadn't thought of before?
You know, it's always so powerful to hear our Boston residents sharing their own personal experiences, and therefore how that translates into what we're looking for. We, in every listening session, have gotten a very wide range of views. And half of the comments, it feels, maybe even more than half of the comments, are about changes that we need to see in the department.
Like what?
And then, for example, we need more transparency around data and making that available. We need to have clarity on how promotional practices are implemented so that we can see more representation and diversity within all levels and ranks of the police department. And in some ways, choosing the leader is very much dependent on, but also different from, setting the exact set of changes that are needed. But having these conversations together has been really important, because you also hear the other half of the comments that tend to come up at our listening sessions have been about people's personal dealings with police officers or the police department and ways in which we can do better. Sometimes things that have gone well and give signs of clear progress, but often ways that we can do better. And we need to choose a leader who can manage the police department, build confidence within just as a manager and for leader of a team, but also very importantly, be delivering and building trust with the public on the type of interactions that we want to see come about and the type of trust that we want to build.
Let's take a call on this. Andrew's on the line in West Roxbury. Andrew, go ahead.
Hey, thanks so much for taking my call. Question about hiring the new the commissioner for the police. If the police unions don't approve of the selection, how would you respond to that? And I guess to back up a sec, how much does the approval of that sort of institution matter in the selection process? Big up to everybody locked and loaded in Ukraine. Thank you.
Thanks for the call, Andrew.
Well, the decision for this police commissioner is an appointed role, meaning there's no vote or union negotiation or other technical process that has to happen. Of course, our unions are important stakeholders and partners in this, as are so many other organizations and community groups of community members who we have reached out to and heard from as well. Our search committee will be speaking and I believe has scheduled sessions with some of our law enforcement unions as well to get their direct feedback on what the search process should include. But at the end of the day, this is about selecting someone who will be a strong partner and cabinet level leader in our administration who will work to tackle the changes that we need and build the trust with the public that we deserve.
All right, let's stay with searches because, of course, you've got two huge ones that can really affect sort of the shape and the nature of the city over the next few years, the other being the search for a new superintendent of schools for the Boston Public Schools. I know you are aware of the concerns out there that it will be hard to attract somebody of great talent and imagination when so many changes, when we've had so many different superintendents over the last, let's say, 15 years. Is there a message that you want to put out there to a potential candidate pool about why Boston, which is a challenging school district, is the place to make a move and come right now?
If you ask people from around the world, where do you think about when you think about what it means to have the best in education, the greatest opportunities open? I know that where my family immigrated from and in so many parts of the world, Boston is that city. Boston's symbolism of what we have meant over the history of public education in this country and Boston's opportunities right now in this moment really are for all of our educational opportunities, including our public school opportunities to represent the mecca of what education could do and should be opening up for young people and their families. And so I see this as one of the most exciting places to be. Come join our team to make sure that you can have an impact on shaping what public education can do in the broadest sense. And for me, this is going to be a major legacy of our administration, is lifting up young people as the mission for our entire city and doing whatever it takes to build the coalition across all sectors of the city, across all levels of government, so that we have the support, the resources, and the vision to make this happen.
Yeah, and I want to just dive into that a little bit further with you. We have an appointed school committee. There is a lot of concern that the mayor holds very strong sway over a superintendent. You've just said this is a legacy like issue for you as mayor. So what commitment are you making as Boston mayor to the next person who holds that superintendent role? What's your commitment to that person?
First is a commitment that I will use every bit of my platform as mayor to create the space and the resources for public education to be front and center, the mission for our entire city. And second is to really invest in this being a team effort, not on the shoulders of one person, or in our case, two people, right, the superintendent and the mayor, but an entire team that we need throughout the Boston Public Schools, throughout our administration, throughout key organizations outside of city government as well, who we will keep fiercely at the table together and focused on our goals and vision. This is a huge opportunity, and I know that Boston is a city where we have everything that we need. Our residents are ready to go. We are we're chomping at the bit to make sure that we can really actualize all the energy and goals that we have.
So last question on this, and I'm going to combine. At Laura K. Peters tweeted, the second half of her question is, will you commit to prioritize local candidates? And I think I'd add to that, you're a mom of kids in the Boston Public Schools. As a parent, what's important to you?
I'm a mom of a first grader and a K-1 student, well, our pre-K, what we call K-1, in the Boston Public Schools. But before I was a mom of these two little guys, I was a legal guardian for my sister, who I was raising through the Boston Public Schools as well. So I've been at this on the parent and legal guardian side for over a decade, connected to BPS, and have experienced and lived in some ways, the tumultuousness of various transitions through the years, and seeing the potential that is available and that we're ready to step into. For me, it's really important that our next leader of the district can hit the ground running. Someone who fiercely believes in Boston, understands what resources there are even beyond our school district, and won't be afraid to take bold action to ensure that we are moving quickly towards that vision. And so I think it is definitely a plus for someone to have that local knowledge of our school communities, of our district. We are going to launch, the school committee is leading the way in a national search. There are a lot of national searches happening right now. 18 of the largest school districts are all searching for superintendents in this current moment. And it's a difficult time in education, given the stress of the pandemic. But I know this is an exciting opportunity, and that we are ready to all roll up our sleeves and be involved.
Let's go to the phones here. We've got Hayden on the line in Dorchester. Go ahead, Hayden.
Hi. Good evening, Mayor Wu. I'm calling to ask a question. Hi. Can you hear me?
Yep. Go ahead, Hayden.
Yeah, I'm calling to ask a question about what is being done about the enforcement of the Boston job policy that requires minority and Boston residents to be hired on these construction jobs. I'd like to know what's being done about the enforcement.
Thanks for your question, Hayden. Mayor Wu.
Thanks, Hayden. This is a really important one, and it's directly about making sure that money that we're spending as a city in doubles and triples and multiplies within our communities. It's about closing the racial wealth gap, and it's about making sure that the opportunities we create really are not just talking the talk, but walking the walk and meeting those goals. Boston has a law on the books, has had a law on the books for many decades now, that was introduced by then Councillor Bowling. And we know that often where we fall short is that we're not putting teeth into or fining those developers who aren't living up to their promises. And so this is an important area for us to make sure to monitor. And in all of the large-scale development projects that we have launched recently, for example, we were just in Nubian Square announcing funding and partnership from the state, and the commitment from the developer there, right, an example of a business owned by a developer of color, the commitment was to go above and beyond our goals from the Boston Residents Jobs Policy in representation on the workforce, even in creating that building, which will house even more jobs after that. So this is on our priority list, and we're going to keep making sure that the monitoring and enforcement is aligned.
All right, let's do a little bit of lightning round here, Mayor Wu. So just quick questions, quick answers. First, 3 bus lines in the city become free tomorrow for 2 years, the 23, the 28, 29. Do you plan to ride any of them tomorrow?
Yes.
Which one?
I will be on there tomorrow. Let me see. I was just getting an update from my team. The 29, I'm told. I'm going to ride with some residents from Franklin Field, and just to emphasize how many communities are connected. And so from our public housing developments to universities and churches and youth organizations, there's a lot that this will open up.
All right, so we'll stick with the lightning round. At vom.com wants to know, would love to know what Mayor Wu's thoughts are on reinstating happy hour.
So you are speaking to one of the sponsors of the city legislation that removed the ban on BYOB. So trying to activate our city and make sure that we are recovering from this pandemic is really important. I think it's important that we can all have more opportunities to enjoy and celebrate and support our small businesses. I know this is a larger conversation with the state, and state legislators have to be involved as well.
And last lightning round question, this is from at Maura O'Toole. Will at Mayor Wu support the multi-year plan to return school librarians and libraries to Boston schools?
Yes, this is a hallmark of Superintendent Brenda Caselius's leadership, and she and I have had conversations about ensuring that we continue making progress this school year and keep building beyond that as well.
So what's the next 100 days about, Mayor Wu?
Well, we in some ways are still looking to build out key posts in our team. We're hiring for 6 different cabinet positions, including school superintendent and Boston Police Department, police commissioner. And it's also about really building out the longer term organizational changes that are needed. We just announced on the 99th and 100th day our new Office of Food Justice, as well as our new Office of Early Childhood, getting these organizations and leaders in place to deepen the work and spread our impact is going to be a focus. In some ways, continuing our public health work, but now really putting a spotlight on housing, climate, childcare, our food systems. There are many ways in which we can continue making a difference.
All right. That is Boston Mayor Michelle Wu joining us just after the first 100 days and on our regular segment, Mondays with the Mayor. Boston Mayor Michelle Wu, thanks so much. We'll look forward to talking to you again next month.
Great to be with you.
A Massachusetts lawmaker wants the state to send a message to Russia over its invasion of Ukraine by banning the purchase and or consumption of products made in Russia. He submitted legislation to do that, and it comes on the heels of New Hampshire Governor Chris Sununu's order to pull Russian-made vodka off the shelves at state-run liquor stores and similar executive orders from governors in a few other states. State Representative Patrick Kearney is the bill's sponsor. He's a Democrat representing the 4th Plymouth District, including Scituate and Marshfield. Representative Kearney joins us now on the line. Representative, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you so much for having me.
So why'd you do it?
Well, as I said, thank you so much for having me on. I think this is really a historic moment for the United States, for the West, our NATO allies, and frankly, the entire world. Russia's invasion of the Ukraine is a clear violation of international law under Article 2 of the UN Charter. And as we've seen, President Zelensky and the people of the Ukraine are defending their democracy against a ruthless dictator, and they need our help. And I think what this bill does is three things. It cuts all economic ties with Russia here in the Commonwealth. It also signals to the U.S. federal government that we need to be doing more to support our Ukrainian friends. And it also signals to the world that the people of the Commonwealth of Massachusetts don't tolerate, support, or fund Russia and their attack on the democracy in the Ukraine.
So have you thought about and have you heard from anybody, a small business owner, for example, about the impact that the products piece of this could have on local businesses? We did some calling today to some businesses that sell a lot of Russian products, looking to have somebody come on. And at one point, one of our producers spoke with the daughter of the store owner. And when she heard about the legislation, she broke down in tears in stress over it. What about that piece of it?
Well, we understand the concerns of small business, and we understand the sentiments that they have. But there are 44 million people that are being attacked for no reason. There are bombs that are going into kindergarten classrooms. The people of the Ukraine are begging the world for help and support. Any dollar that is being spent in the Russian economy purchasing Russian energy, purchasing Russian goods, is supporting the Russian economy and therefore supporting the Russian war effort against the Ukraine. I think it's incumbent upon us at the local, state, and federal, and international, for that matter, levels, to be doing what we can to say to the world and to the Ukraine that we don't support the Russian invasion and that we support the sovereignty of the Ukraine.
So, Representative Kearney, what are you hearing from other members of the legislature about this and from your own constituents?
There's a tremendous amount of support in the legislature. The bill was assigned to House Docket Number, House Docket 4886, earlier today by the clerk's office. There are members that have already signed on to the bill. It's gaining traction and support. We've been doing radio and TV interviews today talking about how important it is to show support for the Ukraine. And as this comes on the heels also of other members of the legislature sending a bill to Treasurer Goldberg and Governor Baker asking them to divest our state pension from any Russian business and running Russian securities.
Any concern about running the risk of feeding into anti-Russian sentiment that could be dangerous for local community members?
No, this isn't anything that's targeted in an individual. This is economic sanctions that are targeted at a foreign economy that's ruled by a ruthless and violent dictator that is attacking, as I said, a free people and the sovereignty of a democracy in the Ukraine. And it's not anti-Russian on an individual basis, but it is a strong message to the Russian leadership and to the Russian economy that we are not going to tolerate their actions and that those actions have consequences.
So, and in a sentence, Representative Kearney, how would you know when it was time for the sanctions to be lifted and how would that happen?
When the Russians leave the Ukraine and respect their sovereignty as a nation, you know, we look forward to discussing trade partnerships like we do with every other country in the world. But we can't be having those relationships, those partnerships, and be spending money in their economy while they're not doing what's right and violating clearly written international law.
All right. That is State Representative Patrick Kearney of the 4th Plymouth District, which includes Scituate and Marshfield. Representative, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
And that is our show for today, folks. Radio Boston is produced by Chris Siderick and Amanda Beland. We had help today from Sarah Leeson, Francisca Monahan, Jack Mitchell, and Matt Ledden. Marquise Neal is our technical director. Karen Schiffman is our interim executive producer. I'm Tiziana Deering. Great to have you with us today. Please do join us again tomorrow for more Radio Boston.